Good evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers. My favorite time of the year. Excuse me, not year, week. Let's hope we're on here every week and not once a year. And I have brought along, what'd you say?
I said, that's funny.
Well, it's called recovery mode. And I brought along one of my favorite people, Dr. Richard Presser.
There's chuckling in the background. Good evening, everyone. Good evening, Carolyn.
Good evening,
Trust
dear.
You're all well.
And we have an individual, as you know, if you follow our show, we talk to people on the other side, and we bring forth those people that we feel will be of great service to you. And Richard does this by using the right brain magic. And if you want to know how to do this, go to our website, Right Brain Magic, and sign up for a session with him. He really is a master at this, as you can tell from the work that we're doing tonight and what we have done in the past. And what I usually do is choose someone for particular reasons, and then I call upon them and see if they are willing to come, and we do a little bit of groundwork before the show. Luther Burbank, all of you gardeners out there and people who love fruits and vegetables probably are aware of the fact that he was responsible for bringing in many varieties of fruits and vegetables. So I'm sure we'll be talking about that tonight. And we are coming into the gardening season, so what a perfect time to have him on the show. So if you would be kind enough to put your concentration at the third eye and in your heart center and listen to Richard's voice, you might be able to pick up some of the energy of the communication between Mr. Burbank and Richard. Richard?
Yes. I'm connecting with his energy, and it is a unsurprisingly a loving energy, but in addition to that, there is this almost excitement about the man. I suspect when he lived, he was a very joyful individual, a very positive, creative kind of individual. Really has this energy of joy and, you know, he's kind of very straight up kind of individual. There's nothing complicated about his approach, and yet I sense wisdom about him also. It's an interesting blend, an interesting character, full of vim and vigor, you might say, as well as the love that I mentioned. Very interesting.
That is interesting. And does Mr. Burbank have a message for us tonight?
Well, I hope so. Let's see. It is my pleasure to join with you all this evening in this extraordinary way. It is perhaps a unique path that I am using here, because whilst many individuals claim the ability to channel, I have been observing these two at work for a long time, not only in this lifetime, but indeed in others. And the clarity with which they do their work is perhaps unique. One of the great challenges of what Richard is doing at the moment is for the individual to, you might say, get themselves out of the road so that what they are bringing forth are the words, the thoughts, perhaps, of the individual with whom they have connected. And whilst, in a sense, anyone can do this, it is actually quite difficult to put yourself aside. Of course, when you do this work, inevitably it is easier to do it when you have some background in the subjects that the individual is speaking about. And if it is too far outside of what you know, it can be very difficult to do this. But in my experience, this individual that I am communicating through brings forth the messages and indeed the energies of those with whom he connects in a very detailed and accurate manner. And so it is with great joy that I share my time and your time with them tonight. I wanted to give you that background because, as I said, there are many out there who claim to be able to channel, but very few do it with great accuracy. And so it is a great joy of mine to come forth in this way, and especially given the connection that I share with these individuals back in the lifetime when I was present, but indeed I am aware of many past life connections, if you will, from my monad working with these two individuals in past lives. However, I particularly wished to talk about those subjects in a sense that I was associated with during my lifetime. And my primary work related to botany and horticulture. I was given the gift, you might say, I brought it with me to be able to readily crossbreed plants and selectively breed plants. I experienced quite a deal of criticism from what you might consider the scientific community because they felt I was not being what they would consider scientific in the way that I went about my work. And in ways you could consider that to be accurate because I did not document much of what I was doing in detail as I did it because in truth I could not have achieved what I achieved had I taken the time to do that, but rather I simply focused on getting the results. I used the skills that I knew that I had to intuitively crossbreed certain species, or indeed as I went through the process of selecting those plants that I wished to work further with as the offspring, you might say, of the cross-pollination and cross-breeding that I was doing, I really worked in a very intuitive manner. And there, I'm sure, are still written reports of people who witnessed me at work. It was not something that I really thought about overly much, but it is true that I would walk down a row of plants and simply quite speedily weed out those that did not fit with where I was wanting to go. You might say I was using my intuition to be guided on what were the best plants to preserve. Of course, some of this is obvious to any home gardener, where you will see some stronger plants than others. And I quite, you might say, ruthlessly weeded out those weaker plants. But there was more to it than this. There was an energy about those crossbreeds, you might say, that were going to move forward that I could sense. Crossbreeds that would fruit or bear seed as required, but also would grow with vigor and sustain that vigor through generations. In a way, this is not something that is immediately obvious as you examine a particular plant, but somehow I just knew this, and it was borne out by the impact that I had on the very broad range of new plant species and varieties that I brought forth in my work. And so it is with joy that I look back on my life. And even though I was subject to some criticism, I do know that the work that I was able to undertake, dare I say it, bears fruit still in your time, as so many of the plant species and the fruits that I, you might say, created, including what is known as the plumcot, indeed several varieties of plumcot, these have stood the test of time. Indeed, there is a variant on one of my potatoes, the now known as Burbank potato, which has become the most widely grown potato in the world. And I, for one, would not recommend eating McDonald's fries for many reasons, but it is not because of the variety of the potato itself, but rather the treatments that those potatoes are subject to during their growing cycle, which makes them quite dangerous, you might say, for people to consume. So I wanted to make those observations about my life and to make a few more comments, you might say, about the kind of work that has followed on from my time, because you might say the traditions that I was following have been taken and distorted quite badly. There was an inherent focus in the work which I undertook to aim to bring forth fruits and vegetables and seeds and so on, which were of benefit to humanity and to those animals that depended upon those grasses, for example, that I was involved with. And I know the work that I did was very positive for both animals that interacted with it and also humanity. Whereas, for the most part, I cannot say such things about the work that is being done in your time. And this is, for the most part, covered by that term genetically modified or GMO products. These have become quite widespread, and indeed the less natural manipulation of the breeding process began even some time before the emergence of what you would call genetic modification. This activity has led to changes in varieties for certain, but these changes, for the most part, are negative rather than positive as far as their impact on humanity is concerned. And it is with great sadness that I observe this work and its agenda, because I'm able to witness the agenda of those who drive this work, companies such as Monsanto and others. Their agenda is not for the benefit of humanity. Indeed, they are very deeply interwoven with those agendas that would reduce the human population quite dramatically, and indeed have an interest in seeing illness and disease permeate the human experience. And the impact of many of these genetically modified varieties are indeed very, very negative, such that they are in many ways distorting the human experience, not only for the consumer, but indeed for the grower of these products. So it is with sadness and concern that I watch these activities, and I encourage all of you as much as possible to seek out those products which are marked with organic. They continue to be, for the most part, well protected from these abuses, not only of genetic modification, but indeed of sprays either during the growing cycle or indeed after the product has been harvested, which can negatively impact a human being. So I encourage you to seek out what has been marked as organic, because it is of far greater benefit to the human system. So I mentioned this. And I also wanted to talk a little about the time in which you live for several reasons. As you know, there are many species of plant, and particularly animals and birds, which are disappearing from the Earth's environment. Also, some insects are at risk, or indeed in some cases have disappeared. And as you may be aware, there has been this carefully crafted interaction and balance between the species of birds and insects and animals and also plants that exist in a particular area. The other thing which is of concern is how plants have been released, and indeed insects and animals, into environments where they were not originally located. And sometimes this has been planned, in other cases it has been by accident. And these distortions are having a great disruptive effect, you might say, upon the biosphere in which they have been released. So, for example, you have weeds that are overtaking large parts of, for example, American forests. You have weeds occurring in many areas of the world where they did not naturally occur, and so have taken over either in the long term or in the short term until a solution was found. You have animals that have been released into foreign environments, such as the frog, which was sourced from South Africa, which was used for medicinal purposes, but which has resulted in the infection of many frog species around the world and is causing a decimation of those frog populations. So there are many examples I could give you of this. Another one in the American environment is the rapidly growing deer population in many parts of the country, where their natural predators, such as the mountain lion, have been cleared away by humanity. And the result is a population which is rapidly growing way out of balance with its environment, such that all of the undergrowth and hence all of the environment for small birds and animals and insects is being destroyed. These imbalances are quite widespread in your world, and anyone with an interest in the natural world will be aware of this on one level or another. And the reason I wanted to mention this is to have you understand that this imbalance will be corrected as events unfold. Most of humanity has bought into the notion of the model proposed by Charles Darwin for evolution as being the explanation for all of life upon the planet. Darwin himself did not believe that this was true, but it indeed serves the agenda of those who wish to control humanity to have this view dominate the understanding of humanity. And for those of you who understand a little more deeply, the natural balance that was created between the insects and the animals and the plants in each area of the world was carefully crafted. As you may recognize, they differ in so many different ways, and there are so many places where you have, for example, a particular plant which relies entirely on an insect, a particular insect, or even a bat or a bird for its pollination. And should that particular insect or bat or bird not be available, then that species would die out. There are so many examples of this across the planet, and these are not generated by some Darwinian process. If you reflect upon it, you would recognize that this is extremely unlikely. And indeed, these things were created in this manner by the beautiful and careful design work which was done by those who created this planet and brought this extraordinary, exquisite mixture and balance to the various areas of the planet. So I mention these things to you because it's important to understand that the, you might say, genetic blueprints for all of these birds and animals and insects and plants and so on are preserved. It's not like they have disappeared. Yes, their expression in your environment may have disappeared or seem to have disappeared, but in truth, they can be returned. And indeed, there have been examples where they already have been returned, where they in truth have been eliminated. This work is already, you might say, underway. So do not be concerned about these imbalances. They are, in a sense, a reflection of the distorted existence that humanity has been living. And these distortions will be corrected as events unfold, as the changes come forth in your world in the coming time. So be at peace with this. Do not be concerned about the need to preserve a particular plant or animal or these distortions which have been introduced. Understand that these things will be resolved and corrected by those who oversee your beautiful planet. So I wanted to bring forth this message of hope amongst the evidence of destruction and distortion that you currently see in your biosphere. Know that these things will be corrected and taken care of. It is not something that will be allowed to persist. It seems like it is not correctable when you view it from within that bubble of consciousness that you are encouraged to take on. But be at peace with this. Understand it indeed will be corrected. And so this is my message for you tonight, and I am very open to accept your questions if you have any.
Yes, we do have questions, and thank you. Somebody by the name of Kenya from California is on line one. Welcome, Kenya.
I think that's working.
That had to sound good. Sorry about that, folks. Since Kenya's not on the line, I will ask a question of my own. We have some people who, we have a phrase called, they have a green thumb. They can grow practically anything. And then we have other people who, well, just forget it. They're not going to bring forth anything in a plant. Can Mr. Burbank give us some input as to what is happening between these two types of personalities?
If you know someone who has a green thumb, you will know that they have an affinity for the plants that they are trying to grow. They feel a connection with those plants, a love for them, an excitement when they produce abundantly, whether it be an ornamental flowering plant or whether it be a fruit-bearing tree or a tomato plant or whatever it be. They have, you might say, an energetic connection, a love, a respect for the plant. And as you probably are aware, that plant has an awareness. It has a consciousness. It is very aware of the attitude of the individual, and so it responds to this. And so It is more they have a green consciousness than a green thumb.
I like that. Thank you. Let's say an individual has a plant that is not thriving. What is your suggestions as far as what this individual could do to see that their plant or tree or whatever it is become more hardy?
This is a complex question because there are so many variables involved. Firstly, it may be growing in soil that is not amenable to that particular plant. It might be too acid or too alkaline for the plant. And if that is so, then it can be adjusted. Perhaps it has too much sunshine or too little. Perhaps it is being crowded out by other plants around it. Perhaps it gets too dry, and so its root system is not vigorous. There are many things that can cause a plant to struggle. It might have an insect infection of some sort or a disease of some sort that it is carrying either on its leaves or within the stem structure of the plant. And so it is important for the individual to firstly understand the optimum growing conditions for that plant and to reflect on some of the issues that I have mentioned here. It may be that the plant, for example, has deteriorated to such an extent that, in fact, it may never recover, that you are perhaps better off removing it and replacing it with something that's happier growing there, or a new version of the same thing that is planted more carefully in alignment with its requirements. All of these things are factors. If a plant is not started out well in its life, then it is likely it will never thrive. The initial planting circumstances of a plant are so important when you are trying to cultivate it, whether it be simply an annual vegetable crop or whether it be a fruiting tree. These things need to be borne in mind. The right growing conditions, you might say, when the plant begins its life are so critical to the success of that plant throughout its life. And of course, as I indicated, there are simply examples that come forth of any species that are not good thriving examples. And if you have one like this, I strongly urge you to simply pull it out and replace it. The great thing about plants of this, of any nature really, is that they are replaceable. And so if you're talking about your garden, there will be other examples that you can get. And take the time to select high quality examples. And I encourage you to cultivate your green thumb by feeling, connecting in a feeling sense with a plant that you are considering buying, or there is one in your garden. And if you are open to communicating with the consciousness of the plant, then it will tell you what it needs to thrive. So there are many threads here that you may consider.
Thank you. That is what I was thinking about, speaking to the consciousness of the plant. And I'm sure there are people out there that would like to do this but have never done it and aren't quite sure how to do it. Can you give us some indication as how someone might do this?
Everything which exists has consciousness and be communicated with, just as I am communicating with Richard in this moment. So too, a plant or an animal or even a rock will communicate with you in this manner if you are open to it. It requires practice. Firstly, it requires a belief that you can do this. And secondly, it requires practice. In truth, it was something that naturally came to me as I became more developed in my work. I intuitively would connect with the consciousness of the plants that I was most closely working with and would encourage and support them, but also they would communicate to me what their requirements were. And indeed, anyone that has a keen gardening activity, intuitively on a level, will connect with the plants. They will know when a plant is dry even before the leaves start to indicate it. Or they might know that the plant is lacking in something intuitively because the plant communicates with the gardener telepathically. You just need to be open to this communication. And of course, it is something that you can practice, or indeed I am aware that Richard teaches this to people if they are interested. So these are all threads. Being open to the fact that the plants can communicate and are very keen to communicate with you as the one who is nurturing them. Be open to this and it will begin to flow.
Thank you. I'm not a botanist and there's so much that I don't know about gardening procedures, but I am somewhat aware of grafting. Can you give us a little bit of information about what happens when a person uses the process of grafting? Maybe it would be a good idea to explain what it is and how it works. Thank you.
Grafting essentially involves connecting the sap flow from the, you might say, new parent plant, connecting the sap flow to the sap flow of that branch or limb that you are connecting. And that really is the essence of the process. And so what you are doing is opening up access to that sap flow and then inserting your new branch or limb or whatever it is you are grafting into that sap flow. And then you can also use some hormonal stimulants, you might say, to assist with this flow at the area of this graft site. And then it is important to protect the site so that it doesn't become infected or dry out whilst this connection is being made. And so what you are encouraging is this, you might say, sap flow connection, which indeed is supported quite naturally by the host plant and the grafted limb if they are sufficiently compatible. And there is quite a range of compatibility that exists. So it is, in a sense, simply this process of having the new branch or limb or twig become integrated into that sap flow of the new host plant. That, in essence, is the process. Now, you are not in any manner interfering with the genetic makeup of either the host plant or the grafted limb. That is the key aspect of this. The grafted piece continues to retain its genetic makeup, and so it will bear whatever fruit that belonged to the original plant, even though it is now getting its nutrition from elsewhere. So this is the key element to this.
Thank you. Can you give us an example of how this would work? In other words, what if we're talking about trees, what trees we might graft to another tree, and what would the purpose be?
A very common example where grafting is used is in many areas of the world. Grapevines are often grafted to what is known as an American rootstock. And the reason this is done is because American rootstock is resistant to a particular aphid that lives in the soil. And this was key in the recovery of the vineyards of Europe some decades ago. So this is a very common example of grafting where the root system of the host vine, you might say, is American rootstock, and there is another variety grafted on that rootstock. It is also commonly done with many sorts of trees, and indeed with many sorts of, for example, rose bushes, where you have a strong growing root system, such as a briar in the case of roses, and a more delicate decorative flower type is grafted on the top of that strong growing root system. So it is a way of giving a more vibrant, stronger root structure to a more delicate plant that would not otherwise grow as vigorously or last as long if it relied on its original root system. This is a much more common practice than is generally recognized. Quite a number of ornamental trees, if you buy them, are grafted in this manner. They are grafted as seedlings. And so unless you look closely, you may not even know that you have a grafted tree. And inevitably, there has to be a high level of compatibility for this to be done, compatibility between the rootstock and the, you might say, trunk and branch structure which will result from the growing tree. In addition to this, there are cases where an individual decides to, rather than plant multiple varieties of a particular species, decides to graft a range of varieties, whether they be plums or pears or apples or peaches, onto the same parent so that you can have one tree in your garden which is actually fruiting at different times and bringing forth different crops. This is quite a fun thing to do if you're a home gardener with limited orchard space. You can have a lot of fun with this if you do your homework.
What a wonderful thought. So, if we graft, is there a possibility that a plant can grow in a area where the climate was less tolerant to the original tree?
Yes, grafting can broaden the temperature range, if you will, that a particular plant might survive in. If it is grafted to a rootstock of a variety that is more amenable to those circumstances, or it is more vigorous, you can indeed achieve the growth of some varieties which would not normally grow in that location.
That's beautiful. I would like to thank you so much, Mr. Burbank, for coming and giving us all of this wonderful information. And considering that in many parts of the United States we're starting to move into spring, where people will be thinking about gardening chores, your information is most helpful to them. So thank you so much.
I see we have Roger on the line.
Oh, I missed Roger. Okay. Roger from Tennessee, you have a question.
Richard and Carolyn, good to hear you all again. And my question to Mr. Burbank is, can he comment on cannabis and marijuana, how, you know, a lot of the states here are now trying to get into the research of it and that kind of thing. Do you think this is going to really, you know, take over a little bit more, but not just in the U.S., all over the world?
Did you hear that, Richard?
Yes. The cannabis plant is perhaps one of the greatest gifts to humanity because it contributes in so many ways. Yes, there are different varieties of the plant, but if you examine it, it brings forth hemp, which is so readily grown and can be used in cloth and rope and so on, and so inexpensive because the plant grows so vigorously. Also, the resin of the flowers and in some cases the seeds can be used for medicinal purposes, for humanity, for so many purposes. It indeed is one of the great contributors to the, you might say, healing regime, the botanical healing regime that has been provided on your planet. And there are many reasons why it has been restricted. One of the key reasons, apart from the competition with other crops such as cotton and so on, but one of the reasons it was restricted is because it breaks down much of the, you might say, mind control processes that have been implemented on your planet, whether it be on an individual basis or whether it be on a mass basis through the use of programming via television and so on. Marijuana acts to break much of this down and indeed renders much of it ineffective. And those who control your world did not want to have these processes being interfered with. And indeed, one of the reasons that it is being allowed to emerge is because, firstly, there is a growing desire to be able to use it. And frankly, more and more people are recognizing that compared with some other compounds that are allowed, such as alcohol, the impact on the human body, in fact, is far less in a negative sense than some of these other substances which are approved and allowed. So there is this growing awareness of the public in this way. But also those who, you might say, run the show believe that they have put in place their programming sufficiently well such that it is no longer likely to be threatened by those who would consume cannabis more readily than they might otherwise do. So these are just a few thoughts in relation to cannabis.
Thank you for your question, Roger. And I do have another question.
Karen.
You're welcome, dear. I have another question for Mr. Burbank. If we have an individual who doesn't wish to devote a lot of time to gardening, but is interested in having some sort of a healing plant in their house, what would you recommend that people use or bring into the home, what plant for healing?
Perhaps the most powerful single plant would be the aloe vera plant. It is not perhaps the most attractive plant to have in your garden, but from a healing perspective, the impact of the, you might call it resin from the sap perhaps, from the leaves of the aloe vera plant have so many positive effects on the human form. So this is perhaps the single most powerful healing plant you could have in your garden. Of course, there are so many possible healing plants you could have, but if you had to choose one, this would perhaps be it.
Thank you. I know that that plant is used for burns. I know some people call it the burn plant. What other applications is that useful for other than burns?
Aloe vera is a very powerful disinfectant, and so it kills most bacteria, most viruses. Interestingly enough, it does not kill bacteria which are positive to the human digestive system. So you can actually drink aloe vera quite safely, and it will, you might say, reinforce the natural digestive balance of the body. So these are a couple of examples. It is also very good for open wounds because firstly it will disinfect the wound, but also it does dramatically foster healing. So there are many uses.
Thank you. I know honey is, honey's used for some of those same purposes. Would you find that aloe vera is more potent for healing than honey?
They are in many ways complementary or alternatives in some cases, but really those two natural things, provided you are getting your honey in its raw form rather than processed, because when honey is heated, as it so often is in the processing of the honey, then you lose many of the nutritional and healing benefits of the honey. So provided you are getting good natural raw honey, then that combination, aloe vera and honey, as two sources of healing and indeed not only externally but within the body, they are two very powerful friends, you might say, in the healing process.
Thank you so much for all of your wonderful information, and thank you, Richard, for being the one bringing Mr. Burbank's information through to our listening audience. We appreciate it and honor your competence and your ability.
Thank you, Carolyn.
Now, I would like to ask you, Richard, what is new on the agenda with things that we have brought forth recently?
Well, before we get into things that we have done, I'd like to mention to our listeners that there are now applications available for Android and for the Apple environment to download and to connect in with the BBS radio show, which I haven't yet done. Carolyn and I were talking to Don just before the show about these, but they apparently make it very easy for you to connect in with the show in a way similar to calling in, but with a lot more flexibility, apparently. And of course, you can simply listen through that application. So there is a very powerful alternative than just connecting via the internet now, and giving you a lot more flexibility in terms of how you might connect. So you might want to check those out. I know I'll be checking them out now that I know they're up and running. I had a bit of search in the Apple store for the application, and it wasn't clear to me what name it's under. So I recommend that you go to the bbsradio.com website. I'm staring right now at the Google Play and App Store links, so you can certainly access them from there. So it'll be fun to see what they're like and perhaps receive our first callers.
And as I understand it, it means they don't need a computer in which to do this.
Correct. Correct. You can do it by your phone or iPad or whatever you wish to use. So back on what we're up to, I guess the project of the moment is the recordings that we've been bringing forth from the Knights Templar. We actually brought the messages forth in 2010 and 2011, but it's taken us until now to get them into a form that we're happy with on video. And just this week I have shipped out all of the first orders of DVDs, which kept me busy, and the Blu-ray discs should arrive early next week. So that'll take a little of my time next week also to get those out the door. So it's very exciting to get those shipped. And indeed, I had an email from someone today in New York saying that her package arrived today. So they are starting to arrive. If you're in the States and have placed your order, there's a good chance you'll see it in the next few days. And if you're elsewhere in the world, it'll probably take a few more days to reach you. Probably.
And by the way, the graphics are just marvelous.
They're fun. I must say I'm looking forward to people's reaction to them. It's quite incredible. I mean, we've lived with these things for so long, and I watch ones that I haven't watched for a while, some of the key ones, and they just touch me so deeply. And, you know, I would have thought I'd become a little, overly familiar with some of them, but it's still there. Carolyn, I notice we have a question there from Laureen, if you wanted to consider taking that.
Well, it's 9:52, We need to be off.
We could run up to almost up to the hour.
Okay, Lorene from Washington on line two. Welcome.
Carolyn, Richard, I did order one of those Templar DVDs, so I'm very excited. I got a soul history reading from you, Carolyn, and I guess that Luther, Mr. Burbank, and me have the same monad.
Richard was talking about that before the show. Oh, that's sweet.
I was wondering
Thank
if he
for
had
calling
any
in,
message
Lorene.
That's
for beautiful.
Me.
Did you have a question for him, or you just
oh,
wanted
yeah.
to...
Oh, yeah, I was wondering if he had any message for me.
Oh.
Since we're kind of kin.
Indeed you are. Let's see what he has to say. My dear Lorene, we have more connection than at the moment you can begin to understand, and I encourage you to reconnect with a photograph of me, and there are many around, as you know, and perhaps print one out and sit quietly in meditation, examine the photograph, and then go into meditation and to intend to connect with me, because you can do this. You can make that connection with the work that I was doing and the way I positioned myself in the world, you might say. And these things, if you reflect upon them, will begin to open a door for you to connect not only with me, but with your monad and indeed with other examples of your past lives, you might say, other fingers of consciousness from our common monad. So I am excited that you took this opportunity to come forth and connect in this manner. And please take the time to meditate, because I will be there connecting with you if you do this. And so take the time,
beautiful.
And I will be there with you and for you.
That is beautiful. And Richard, if anyone wishes to order the Templar DVD, where would they go to get that?
Well, we have a website. Funny that is. It's called it's called truestoriesofthetemplarknights.com, and there's a dash between each of those words. So in other words, true-stories-etc. truestoriesofthetemplarknights.com with dashes between them all. And if you key that in, bingo, you'll find the website and some testimonials and an example of an episode 9, I think it is, that's up there. So you can find a little more about this material. It's very exciting, I think. I think people will begin to take a different view of who and what the Templars were if they listen to this material. There's so much that's been written and said about them out there that has nothing to do with who and what they were. So it's been very exciting to bring this forth.
And the reason that there wasn't is because it was at a time when it was not a safe thing to do to write anything down. There were too many persecutions by the Catholic Church, so none of their information was really written out and passed down to us. That's what makes that DVD so incredibly wonderful.
No, it was about as life-threatening as trying to introduce a currency that's not controlled by the banksters.
Banksters. Oh, thank you, Richard. Thank you, Mr. Burbank. Thank you to our callers. And until next week.
Indeed,
we
until
bless
next
you.
Time.
Really. Bye for now.